Good day. My name is Roger Molina. I'm the executive editor of the Leonardo Publications at MIT Press. And it's my pleasure today to moderate a discussion on a recent ebook that we have just published on water in the air, on ways in which artists and scientists are collaborating together on very important questions relating to water. I'm now going to ask the other participants in this podcast to introduce themselves briefly. So, Annick, maybe you could begin.
Hello, my name is Annick Bureau. I am a French Paris-based art critic and curator, and I run Leonardo OLATS. Leonardo OLATS is a French non-profit sister organization to Leonardo, and I've been guest editing this ebook.
Thank you, Annick. Jean-Marc, maybe you could introduce yourself.
Okay, I'm Jean-Marc Chomaz. I'm a professor at École Polytechnique, and I'm a researcher at CNRS France. And my field of research is geophysical fluid dynamics, so this means ocean and atmosphere. And this is linked to the climate change. And for 24 years, I started building a new lab in Paris. And from the start, we got artists in residencies.
Very good. Thank you. Michael and Sean, maybe you could introduce yourselves.
Hi, my name is Sean Taylor. I'm one half of the Soft Day Collaboration. My background is in the visual arts. I'm an artist and a lecturer in a master's program in socially engaged practice at the Lick School of Art and Design. And I've been working with Michael now collaboratively since 1999-2000.
And I'm Michael Farnstrom. I'm a university lecturer here at the University of Limerick in Ireland. And like Sean said, we've been working together since 1999. My formal background would be engineering and then computer science. I'm heading up a research group here on interaction design and also doing a lot of music technology. So there's a lot of number crunching going on. Whether it's for pop or if it's for science, but it's part of my daily job. But that has been largely shaped by our collaboration over the past 15 years.
Very good. Thank you. Now I'd like to ask Annick, who edited this ebook, to explain a little bit about the project and maybe some observations she had as a result of working with all of you and the other authors in the book.
Well, obviously, there are many approaches to water in the earth. And putting together this ebook, that is a selection of articles already published in Leonardo, plus articles coming from workshops we organize with Leonardo OLATS, there are two significant trends that became obvious while I was browsing through all this material. The first one is the growing number of art projects and therefore articles dealing with environmental, ecological, and climate change issues. And it is no wonder that most of them were published quite recently, that is, within the last 10 years. And in this respect, Mab Krios by Safday is one of them. The second remarkable thing that I noticed, and which is kind of opposite, is a long permanent trend, an ongoing trend throughout the articles on arts, hard science projects that have been published. And by hard science, I mean physics, fluid dynamics, waves, etc., with art projects dealing with this matter. And I was not entirely expecting this as strongly.
Okay, thank you, Annick. So now I'd like to ask Safday to maybe first just present very briefly the project that we have included in the ebook that you were involved in as part of the Leonardo Lovely Day, Lovely Weather project. And then maybe give us a few topics, one or two topics to discuss. So first, please present the work you did.
Thank you. Well, as part of the Lovely Weather artist residencies in Donegal, we were selected to work in a particular area of West Donegal and respond to the effects of climate change within that geographical area In our research, we discovered that there are two contested marine dead zones, one in Donegal Bay and one in the inner harbour in Killybegs Harbour, which used to be the home of the Irish fishing fleet, which is a lot smaller these days. And so we worked up there for about a year and a half, traveling up from our base in Limerick to work with the people in Donegal. So we consulted quite a lot of people in the project. We consulted scientists. We worked with Rosenberg and Diaz. Diaz is based in the Marine Institute of South Carolina. He's one of the world's leading experts on marine dead zones. And we were able to access their data on these two specific marine dead zones, which we then converted into musical composition.
I mean, I could add that apart from the kind of global data that we got from Diaz and his collaborator, we also got data from the Marine Institute in Ireland and the Met Éireann, which is the meteorological service, and from some of the consultancy companies like Aquafact that do all the dirty work for the authorities. So we got some wonderful, rich data to dig from, 8 years of data in total, that we could harvest from and try to make sense of and try to understand how and why do these dead zones appear, where they do, when they do it, and remains to be explained why.
Mm. And I suppose in terms of the topics that we were interested in discussing on this podcast, and also we were interested in exploring in this project, was how we could mediate the scientific data to the local population in Killybegs that are primarily affected by these marine dead zones. And what having two dead zones out in the bay actually meant for the community. Were they aware? Did they care? Did they take any notice? If they did take any notice, would they react, respond? And so this notion of a kind of a socially engaged approach to working with people around the data is very, very important for us, because one of the problems that we find with a lot of issues to do with climate change is that as soon as you start talking either the politics or the science of the subject that you're dealing with, the eyes in people's heads start to roll back and people tend to nod off, or they become uninterested or maybe a little bit too passionate perhaps, and you can't have you, it's very hard to have a kind of a reasoned dialogue or reasoned discussion around the issues. So we were interested in, if we created this piece of music and got local musicians to actually play it, it would possibly give the data a more specific meaning to that space and place and to those people who live there. And by involving as much of the people in the town of Killybegs as we possibly could do, and believe me, it was quite considerable in the end, I think we were able to manage to do that. We were able to create that space for debate around the issues of climate change and science, but through the creative lens, or through the creative turn, as we like to call it.
Let me just pick up on the whole question of socially engaged interaction in your practice. So just thinking back as you were doing the work, maybe just explain to us how long it took you from the beginning to the end to do the work, and maybe how working with the local community changed the way that you were thinking about the project.
Well, as soon as you start talking to people, it's going to take you off in directions that you haven't possibly considered before. So, you know, we used to go up, for weekend trips, because obviously we're teaching during the week, and we would stay in Killybegs and we would just talk to people. We would walk down to the...
Go down and hang around down the pier, chat up local old fishermen and talk about what the fishing used to be, and they would put us in contact with somebody else who had, you know, experienced how the fishing declined, for instance, and they had their own ideas why and how, what was going on in the sea. But, you know, the sea is this sort of opaque surface, so we don't see what's down there normally unless you deal with some of the consultancy companies. So somehow in this dialogue with a circle of people that was expanding week by week, there was kind of a deeper understanding evolving in that local community.
It was interesting that For example, in Killybegs, the headquarters of the Irish Fishermen's Organization, the IFO, is based there.
KFO.
KFO, yeah, well, Killybegs. But they used to be the Irish Fishermen's Organization. And they're quite, they're very, very political, very vocal, obviously, within the area, and very concerned about, obviously, the decline of the fishing fleet there. But when we first got up there, people were saying, oh, no, you don't want to talk to those guys. You know, they're like the mafia. They don't talk. And if you start talking about marine dead zones to these guys, they are going to absolutely shut down the conversation. So they were the first people we talked to. And actually, they were really, really good. And they opened up a whole series of doors within the community for us that we hadn't possibly realized that were there before, including the Chamber of Commerce. And because we kept saying that, you know, the dead zones in the bays they're contested. Somehow that made it okay. We were able to kind of navigate a way through the community where, because we were perceived to be a little bit neutral in our approach, we were able to talk to both sides of the contestation, the deniers and the people who actually believe it was there. So working in this way, this kind of socially engaged way, with the evidence, with the scientific evidence that we had, it's a much slower way of working. It evolves over a longer period of time, and you have to be a lot more patient. And there's a lot of kind of waiting to see what happens, or, you know, positing ideas, letting them sit within the community and see if they kind of resonate back to you. So it was a much, much slower way of working. So I think from start to finish, we're talking at least nearly 3 years, weren't we, Michael? I think it was about that. Was it
to end the process?
It felt like that, anyway. Yeah.
And, on the ground, was it about a year and a half?
Mm.
Very good. Okay, I'd like to bring Jean-Marc into the discussion. So maybe, Jean-Marc, you could just begin and explain the project that you have described in the ebook, and then we'll follow up with a discussion on some of the topics. So, Jean-Marc?
The project is an installation with the artist group called AA. And the installation is a water tank. And inside the water tank, you have a globe, like the globe we use as a kid with the earth on it. And this globe, at some point, will rotate inside the water. And in the scenario, we inject at a particular time the fluorescent dye just on the globe, and this fluorescent dye will make a cloud that will just be a very thin layer of dye along the surface of the Earth, and this cloud will move toward the equator and then be released inside the fluid in kind of a very dramatic way. It will escape into ether. So nothing is realistic in this installation. The name is Planet Laboratory. So it's really directly a planet inside a laboratory installation. And the idea is that I'm doing fundamental science. And in that case, I'm using the fundamental science to do like a metaphor of something totally non-realistic for the Earth climate. But this will still speak about this fragility of the atmosphere, because you are producing a very thin layer. And all the dynamics from the scientific ground is also connected to the real Earth, but transposed in another way. So it's really a very metaphoric installation. And the idea is that this will connect with just what people said just before, is that the idea is to also make a more sensitive approach to science, so not be just something very sensible, but something more sensitive, so for the people to experience like a dramatic change in the weather, but in a very planet that did not exist at all.
Can you just mention how long your collaboration with the artist took, and maybe how, as you were working with them, you're a working scientist, how the interaction maybe changed your own way of thinking about the problems you were working on?
Yes, so this installation with this particular group, this was the second installation. So we have been working together for more than 3 years when we started this installation. So for this one, we thought about from the start what we may imagine as an installation to speak about, in a way, to speak about climate. And we mixed the two universes, the one from the artist and the one from myself. So the artists, they are working a lot with this, they try to visualize the cloud, and they have the motto that the cloud now are all made also by men, so you cannot differentiate between the real atmosphere and the atmosphere with the man contribution. So the idea that the man contribution is everywhere. So now it's part of any event or any effect or phenomena on the Earth. And my own idea was to bring this idea of a very fragile layer. So the idea that we are on a space ship, we do not have an extra one. So we are just one spaceship that is called Planet Earth. And on this planet, we have no windshield. And we are just living in a very, very thin layer on the surface of this planet, very fragile. And if you see the Earth from space in a way, you realize that this is first very fragile and you cannot see the thickness of the atmosphere. So the atmosphere is just thinner than a thin layer on the Earth. And this idea of the fragility of the atmosphere will bring to me another this idea that this atmosphere is not granted. So we have to protect that. It may even disappear. So this is the two ideas we mix together to have finally the idea of these installations. So we work on many, many different ideas, and we finally focus on this one.
Very good. Now, Anik would like to ask you a question, Jean-Marc.
Yes, you have been collaborating with artists for many, many years and built many, many projects. How do you choose your collaboration with artists? Do you have a scientific and artistic criteria or both?
No, Sabia. In fact, I'm just say yes to any demand from the artist. So I've been doing that for, as I say, more than 24 years. And usually they are not used to the type of response I'm giving to the demand of the artist. So they are more in the search for some technical help, and I'm carrying them in another universe. I'm trying to expand what they I want them to go deep into the science, the scientific imagination, but then to be able to use like a metaphoric or to write poem using physical phenomena. So this is really the way I'm collaborating with all the artists. So when they came, they think I will be a normal scientist, but I'm not. And I will really try to inject all this, what we are deep inside us, so really the scientific side of science and then this will make art and science with a different nature than other art and science, because this is, in a way, also from the inside. So this also contains all the myths of science, and it's a way to also give some human side of science. So it's also the same idea that is carried when you try to make real or concrete or effective the data to the people. It's the same idea to try to demystify science, to really show that the science is made by men. So it's not something that is kind of universal. It's something very fragile in essence, and something we may share. So it's the idea to break, in a way, break the ice between the public or the artist and what is really the science, not just the scientific proof.
Okay, very good. Anik would now like to ask a question to Michael and Sean.
Yeah, obviously in this project, and I saw you working, there is a strong public engagement and a strong social engagement with all kinds of groups of people. But I would like you to ask you a question. How do you consider your work as a musical piece? And when you place yourself on the sound music map, because in this piece, for instance, you put together computer algorithmic music, but also include the St. Catherine marching band. So how do you consider and how do you see your artistic creation?
Well, first of all, I mean, what most people call music is to us a subset of sound art. So it's kind of a continuum. I'll happily play, I can play a car, I can play a bottle, I can play anything, piano. It doesn't matter. They're all playable. It's part of sort of expressing something through that instrument.
The sound element is, and that's it. It's just one element. It's part of an overall package. I mean, you know, we're also interested in the spectacle and theater and performance. So, you know, to describe ourselves as just sound artists, I think wouldn't be telling the whole picture of what Soft Day does. And of course, then there's the dialogue. I mean, our practice is as much a dialogical practice as it is a sound practice or a performative practice. Mm-hmm. We wear many hats, and the more work that we've done together, those hats just seem to be increasing rather than decreasing. It's very hard to narrow down and say we're specifically about this. And the good thing about having many hats is that you can wear many hats at different times.
Yeah. It's also, it's to me, sort of being able to switch roles every second hour between art and science is very valuable, because some of the sounds you hear in Marv Kreisch, the actual, what we call the piece, what you're listening to is actually, it's not recorded sounds. Many of them are sound models. We made hours and hours of field recordings, and we analyzed them in fine detail, and many of the sounds, like for instance, sounds of the sea and the wind and all this, are actual fluid dynamic models that synthesize new sound in real time, but based on the data that we got about the marine dead zones. So that's one kind of auditory display. Well, the medium is the message, if you like. For the more musical thing, if you have violinist playing something or somebody playing saxophone in that score, that's also from the data where we creatively choosing what scale it's going to be in, what tempo. And we've done, we could call it data wrangled, the data to fit into that musical space. And we go over the data set again.
Very good. I'd like to take Anique's question to Soft Day and turn it around to Jean-Marc. So as a working scientist, how do you see your working with artists and art science collaboration in your own scientific work? Does it change your scientific strategy? Do you make discoveries that you wouldn't otherwise make? Why have you invested so much time in this art science practice as a scientist?
It's very clear that first the motivation to go into art was to observing, in fact, listening to one of my colleagues on the radio, and then I realized that when he was answering to the question of climate change, the world was the same, but the question in the scientific world and in the rest of the community was very, very different. And then I realized that why it was so is that if I'm just speaking as a scientist, I may just speak about proof and fact. And what we need really, because the climate change, as I say, is a too big question for science, is too big, and science would be too slow to answer this question. And what really is needed is that we should be allowed as a scientist to go into other level that would be intimate conviction, intuition, maybe also fair belief or mystical thing. But we have to realize all this level. And if we go down in this type of level for the communication with the public, then we need another mean for this communication. And also we may, at that time, we may share with the public, because then we no more speak as a scientist, but we speak more on the human side. So the debate may start again. If I speak as a scientist, I know the fact, I know the proof, and there is no symmetry in the debate with the public. If I speak as an artist, in a way, I'm making a proposal that is very open, and then the dialogue with the public may start. So the motivation was really that. And if I see what this has changed in my scientific practice, when you do that, you realize, you visualize that in the scientific practice, you have a total freedom, what we call academic freedom. So it's more in the matter of what I'm making many, many decisions each day to know what I will search on, what is the subject I will do. So in this academic freedom, I need some guideline in a way. And this guideline, usually you have two strategies. Either you do that with your pair, and then This is what I call incremental physics, and this, the physics is, or the science is moving by itself, and it, this is the science disconnected from the people. And you may find the boson de Higgs or things like that, very important things. But there is another way if you start sharing with the public, because you are doing artistical adventure with them, then you realize that maybe you should focus on another point that will be the key point for the essential research you should do, may be different from what you will have decided if you were not interacting with the public in this way. So this is more sharing with the public not only the answer that we are of question we are asking ourselves, but to decide with the public which question we should address. So to start doing science with the public much before, much upstream that what is done usually. So we don't want to do pedagogy, we don't want to do public outreach. We want the public to outreach us in the way and the choice we are making for science.
Very good. We don't have very much time left, but just listening to all three of you speak, I think it's very interesting, really, to understand your deeper motivations. And I'm just wondering if Michael and Sean or Jean-Marc, you would like to ask each other a question.
When do we set up a new project working together, Jean-Marc?
Oh, that's I say yes all the time. So.
I mean, I just want to make a comment, you know, and maybe something that could be discussed later is that, you know, for us, you know, one of the most fundamentally important things in the way that we work with the scientific data is to create this by sonifying it, by flipping it into a piece of music, if you want to call it that. We are able to create this emotional connection to the data that seems to kind of transcend a kind of traditional approach that people would have to scientific data. It makes it real and it embeds it in a place. And that's very, very important for us. And the second thing that's really, really important to us, and more important in every project that we do, is to take this work out of the institution of the museum and the gallery and to situate it in the heart of a community. So, for example, when we did two versions of the Mar of Crees project, we did the live performance in a boatyard, in Mooney's Boatyard in Killybegs, in which all of the local town was invited to, and that was very, very successful. And then we did the same, well, we did a different version of it. We did a gallery-based version of it in Letterkenny, which had another completely different audience. And so, but for us, that first audience, the local audience, presenting it in that way, in that space, with that level of contestation around the scientific data, was crucially important for us. And I think it's very, very important that when we do engage with the public around science and climate change, that we take the work out to the public.
Jean-Marc, you want to comment on that?
I think it's a comment because in many of the installations I'm doing, there is also a sound that is used. And usually the sound is also bringing the installation in another universe, if you want. So the sound is really a way, I think, a very deep way to transform the visual aspect. I mean, even if I play, for example, with waves, in another installation, there is a wave maker that is used as a silent soft drum. And in this installation, there is a musical composition that goes with that. And the sound, I think, is really a way to transpose, I mean, to take the people in another dimension. So they will not see, for example, waves. It transforms also what you see. So they're not the perception. So it may be the perception of data, another way to get access in a way, or to make sensitive the data as you do. But it's maybe also a way to transform another physical effect into something that will be different because people will focus on different aspects of that, or really a wave may become something else than a wave. So you go also, you transform something that is the data, but it's the visual data that the eyes is seeing and the brain is interpreting. So there is connection that we may make between the two type of approach, I think, and there is a link that may be built on that. So I'm ready to collaborate.
Very good. Thank you. Unfortunately, we're out of time here. I'm going to let Anik conclude our podcast.
Oh, well, this is difficult to conclude after what you have said. Another thing that was striking for me when doing this ebook was that Leonardo was not only publishing articles dealing with water, but has also been proactive in this matter. And we actually organized or co-organized three events. One was the Lovely Weather Artist in Residence project in Ireland. The second one was the Spirit of Water workshop in Marseille with people from Africa dealing with what water means in their culture. And I think it is not necessarily that common. And also the last one, which gives the title to this ebook, which is The Water is in the Air workshop, also in Marseille. And to conclude, I have to thank some sponsors. This ebook and the Water is in the Air workshop are part of the Studio Lab project, which is a European FP7 funded project and gathers 13 institutions throughout Europe. And it would not have been possible without them. And we need also to thank the Leonardo initiatives
at the University of Texas, Dallas.
And the ATEC program that Roger is part of, because also they have been tremendously supportive to this entire project.
Thanks for listening to this podcast, which was brought to you by Leonardo. For more information about the journal, or to subscribe at a special listeners-only 20% discount, visit mitpressjournals.org/Leon, that's L-E-O-N, and enter the discount code LEONEP24, that's L-E-O-N-E-P-2-4, at checkout. For more information about Water is in the Air and other Leonardo ebooks, visit the MIT Press Journals website at mitpressjournals.org and click on the MITP Journals on your e-reader link.